the University of Essex podcast, your non-stop shop to learn about our research, hear genuine student experiences, and to get all your questions answered.
Welcome to Understanding University, the ultimate uni podcast. My name is Katie and I work for the University of Essex outreach team, helping to deliver activities and events to support students and guide them on their higher education journeys. The outreach team believe that all students, regardless of their background, education or where they come from, should have an equal opportunity to discover whether higher education could be part of their future. Our podcast is designed to give listeners an insight into university life, including the journey before, during and after, dispel some of the myths out there and also motivate and excite you to achieve your potential. If you'd like to know more or have any questions, please contact us by emailing outreach@essex.ac.uk.
Hello and welcome back to Understanding Uni, the Ultimate University Guide. My name is Izzy and I'm part of the outreach team here at the University of Essex. And today I'm joined by Tracy, who's part of the Swiss team. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Certainly, thank you. My name's Tracy. Yes, I'm an accessibility and wellbeing advisor here at the university. I work within SWIS, which stands for Student Wellbeing and Inclusivity Service, quite a big umbrella service looking at student support. And my area really focuses on students with extra support needs, whether that be disability, long-term medical condition, mental health condition, specific learning difference, a whole range of different areas where a little bit of extra support just helps them get a good start on their course.
Oh, great. That's really, really good to know. So for students that maybe kind of fall under one of those different areas that you mentioned just now that you look after, how can they go about maybe finding out a little bit of information about how they can support themselves or receive support whilst they're at university, especially here at the University of Essex?
Okay. So I think probably the first area to look at would be our website. Lots of information about student wellbeing and inclusivity services on the website, particularly a nice video giving them an overview of the SWIS team and what we can offer, the different strands of what SWIS covers in terms of support. They can then narrow that down into the accessibility and wellbeing side. If they've got a pre-diagnosed condition when they're joining us, then there's going to be other ways that they can disclose that. But just getting a general flavour of information, I would say the website is a good starting point.
Great, thank you so much. And for these students, as they start to make these applications, is there a particular part of their kind of university applications that they can highlight the fact that they might need additional support, or that they kind of are a student with a disability or SEN, anything like that?
Absolutely. So it's at the admission stage and the application stage when they can first have the opportunity to disclose. Not everyone chooses to, they're not required to, but that's the first opportunity to do so. If students actually disclose on their application, then we get early sight of that and we'll start to reach out to them in the summer before they're due to arrive. So for students with more complex needs, we can have really good early conversations about getting them registered with the service and getting support in place. For other students, it will be later in the summer, but the same processes and procedures will apply. Doesn't have to be at the stage of application. Many students choose to wait until they get here to disclose. I personally encourage earlier the better. You want to hit the ground running. You don't want to be worrying about admin to do with your support needs, when really what you want to be doing is everything else involved in starting university life. So I would advocate the sooner the better, but it's not a requirement. You can do so when you first arrive. You can do so directly to SWIS or to your department. And also we recognise that students won't necessarily know they have support needs when they start with us. It might be a long-term medical condition that they get a later diagnosis of whilst they're on the course, or it might be that they think they might have a specific learning difference but have never been diagnosed. So that might be something they come to see us about to explore as well. But certainly in terms of actually making contact with our service on your application, preferably, if not, as soon as you feel confident and able to do so.
Great. So they can kind of come up to you at any point and just say, I've got this diagnosis. How do I go about getting support? And what are my next steps? Is that right?
Completely. So again, there's two strands of doing that. If they know they've got a diagnosis, they can come straight through to the accessibility and wellbeing team. If not, they can speak to our wellbeing assessors, who will talk to them about the pathway to getting the appropriate evidence that they would need to register with us.
Oh, great. So you have that kind of support in place to help them through that entire process of actually getting a diagnosis. Is that right? So helping them make those next steps to, if they need to find a diagnosis, if that's what they're after.
Potentially, yes. So it might be just be signposting, because if, for example, want a diagnosis of ADHD, it's not something we can facilitate, but assessors and advisors can point them in the direction of the correct routes for assessment, such as the GP, and then a referral onto a specialist. If it's a specific learning difference, such as dyslexia, dyscalculia, dyspraxia, that is something that they can get a supported process through the university. So once they're a registered student, and we would talk to them about this over the summer beforehand, but once they're actually registered with us, they would have the opportunity to get a supported process, which is a subsidised cost of accessing an educational psychologist report. So they contact SWIS, they say they would like to explore a diagnosis, and they pay a small fee relative to the outside external costs, and then we will put them in touch with an external assessor who can actually go through the full diagnostic process with them. If they then get a diagnosis, we will then offer them that opportunity to register and put their support in place. So certainly, again, the website's a great source for, if you go in and search SPLD diagnosis, there'll be some pages there that explain the types of costs outside and privately compared to waiting until you're registered and doing that through the university. Considerably better financially to wait.
I'm sure that's really, really helpful for a lot of students that maybe haven't realised that they know they need the support, but they don't actually know how to go about it, or they're worried about the cost of it. So mentioning the fact that it can be beneficial for them to do it through the university once they've registered financially, then that's really, really useful for them to know.
Yes, and I would add as well, a lot of students think they may have gone through the full diagnostic process at school or at college. Sometimes it will only have been to support their exams. So if they don't have a large document as a diagnostic report, it's likely they haven't gone through the full process. So it's worth getting in touch with us early and saying, this is the evidence I've got. Is it the right type of evidence, both for the university and potentially for extra funded support? And we can take a look at that in advance and let them know whether they've got everything they need or whether they do need to take that next step.
So students, you mentioned that when they get in touch with you, that kind of you'll reach out to them and support them through these different processes. Are they likely to be talking to different people every single time, or will they have a particular advisor assigned to them?
Okay, so on initial contact, they'll get a duty advisor to respond to them. But once we've actually got to the process of reviewing who we're going to be having coming here in the new academic year, they will be allocated a named advisor. That named advisor will then reach out to them, explain what we need to register with our service. Specifically, that's going to be their consent and their evidence. And that advisor will then work with them for the duration of their course. So it's not just the academic year, it's the duration of their course. That relationship then builds up. And that advisor is there for support and guidance on all of the stages. So getting your evidence in, getting registered with us, and then all of the steps of putting support in place, both with the academic department and with extra funding.
Oh, great. Thank you so much. I'm sure that'd be a relief for a lot of students knowing that, oh, I'm not going to have to repeat everything and share everything all over again to a different person every couple of months. So I think that'd be really reassuring for a lot of them. So thank you for sharing that. For the different students, so I know that you help to put different processes in place for them. Does that tend to just be during exams, or can that be support with kind of extended deadlines on assignments, or support during lessons and lectures and things like that? Or does it vary depending on the student?
It completely varies. We very much look at individualised support. People may have a similar diagnosis, but their experience of that diagnosis will not be the same. So when we first meet with a student or are allocated to a student, it's about the conversation. It's about reviewing the evidence, having a conversation with that student, seeing what their specific needs are, what their previous experience in education has been, and what learnings we can take from that, what worked well for them, what didn't work so well. So the advisor has a detailed conversation with the student before they decide with the student what are the best measures. Now, that can be very straightforward. That can be making sure they've got materials and deadlines and assignment briefs well in advance so they can plan and prepare. That might be access to what we call SPLD cover sheets, sheets, which are a sensitive marking document, so that when their work is marked, they are not marked down for issues that are associated with their SPLD, but it's much more focused on content and ideas. It might be access to the extenuating circumstances late submission process, so that we would ask that that consideration is made for students that are putting in a later assignment, and also the individual exam arrangements. So they're ones that are very common and that we would look to put in place, but they're also more refined and more individualised depending on student need and what their experience is. So for example, for someone with a visual impairment, for example, we might be looking at much more specific and specialised support. And that's why we need to speak to the individual and we need to understand what works for them.
Great, thank you. And I'm just wondering, for students, once they've come forward to you and saying, and you've become aware of the diagnosis that they have and you're starting to put processes in place, does it then come down to yourselves, or is it down to the students to then get in touch with their own academic staff, lecturers and teachers from their department to make them aware of this? Or is this something that the advisor assigned to them helps them do or does for them?
Okay, excellent question. I think one that students do worry about. You mentioned earlier, once they've gone through things once, they don't necessarily want to be repeating to a number of sources, and that's why we step in. So once we have registered a student with ourselves and we have created what we think is a set of reasonable adjustments, those are recommendations that we make to the department. That goes through to the department through our background automatic systems, bearing in mind GDPR requirements, of course, so that the student's data stays very safe and very secure. And it goes through to key members of the department. That will be one person that's responsible for the administrative work within the department, who will make sure the information goes to the right people and not more than the right people. So the tutors that are going to have contact with that student. And also the DDLO, which is the acronym for Departmental Disability Liaison Officer. And that's somebody within the academic department, often a lecturer, a member of the academic team, who also takes extra responsibilities for understanding the nature of the support work and the understanding of how we work in SWIS and are the conduit for that information. It means the student's got not only a named advisor within SWIS, but a named contact within the department that they can go to if they feel maybe their adjustments aren't working out for them, or they want to speak to somebody informally who understands the academic content. It might be a more appropriate question for someone that's within the work than someone that sits outside it, and they've got pathways and choices. And again, that's all also about availability or who they prefer to have that conversation with. So the student's got choice, but it's not about repetition.
Great, thank you. That was actually going to be one of my next questions, to whether this designated disability liaison officer is someone that they can also go and talk to themselves. So that's really good to hear that students can go and talk to them. Is this something that they are kind of, it's highlighted to them through SWIS that this is in your department, this is your DDLO? That you can go and talk to at any point? Is it kind of made aware to them, or is it kind of, do they need to find out for themselves?
No need for them to seek it out, no. Hopefully we've given that information in a number of ways. So normally the department will also have made it very clear who the key contacts are. They will have flagged our services, they will have flagged their own services, both within their course guide and their induction materials. But no, when a student registers with us, part of our process, once we've put all of the background information in place, is we write a supporting arrangements email to the students so they clearly know what we've done and why we've done it. And within that, we'll name who their DDLO is, we'll give them a link to the website so they can look up the contact details, and if the DDLO changes, that remains a live link for them. And so that information is there to be had, both once they're registered with us, but also if a student is just curious, if they don't want to come forward to SWIS and they want to go to the right person in the department to discuss a possible disclosure, they can go to the website, again, just looking up DDLO, and they'll see the list of contacts for all of the departments.
Great, thank you so much. So it seems like SWIS, you're kind of there to give them a well-rounded experience at university with that kind of support network in place to make sure they feel comfortable and able to kind of make the most out of their time at university with these different arrangements and processes put in place to support them.
Absolutely. It's about support, but it's also about empowerment. It's giving students the way to access properly and completely their course and feel that they know the key contacts and they can join all of that up. Yes.
So for students, we mentioned a little bit about the kind of funding side of it, in that if they come through Swiss once they've registered at the university, that they can you can help them with the process of getting a diagnosis, and it tends to be better financially for them. Are there any other kind of financial support packages, I guess, out there for students that come forward as being disabled or SEN or kind of different, anything like that?
Absolutely. So there are a range of other different funding pathways, but the key one is disabled students' allowances, which comes through student finance. And so students can apply to their funding body for that. They don't need to be registered with us to do so, and they can apply in the summer before they've actually enrolled on our courses. So the application for DSA is quite straightforward if they've got evidence, and they can make that application on their online portal, or they can do a paper-based application by going to the DSA website and accessing those forms. The idea of the DSA funding is that students with a disability or an additional support need wouldn't be paying out funds that a student without it would have to pay. So the types of things that this might lead to for a student could be some one-to-one specialist tutorial support for study skills, for example, if their disclosure is a specific learning difference. If the disclosure is a mental health condition, another example might be some specialist mentoring on a regular basis. Another key area is assistive technology and the right kit to be able to run that assistive technology, or recording devices, for example, to be able to record lectures and tutorials. So there's a huge amount that can come for applying for DSA that will be incredibly supportive. And again, I would just echo my point from previously, the earlier you do so, the better your start at university can be. And it's a lengthy process, you know, so it's one of those things that we do encourage students to do at an early stage, make that application. The journey of that application does involve an assessment process, not a test, an assessment process, usually with a very lovely assessor who will talk you through the types of things that might benefit you on your course. So it's really helpful for helping the student narrow down what their needs might be and what obstacles they might face, and therefore what tools and strategies and techniques might be there for them to help knock down those barriers. So DSA, absolutely would recommend. If students don't think they're eligible for DSA when they go onto the system, to talk to us, and we'll be able to see whether there are other opportunities that they might be eligible for because of their status or because of their funding stream or their course type. But DSA is the main focus, really, to check eligibility for that.
That's really interesting. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I'm just wondering, it's not, I guess, not necessarily directly linked to students with disabilities, but for the DSA, if students apply for it, are they eligible, I guess, to apply for other support packages? Are you aware of, like, I know that we have like the hardship fund and things like that. Does it mean that because they're getting a DSA, they can't apply for something like the hardship fund, or does it just very much vary depending from person to person?
It's an excellent question. The DSA is there for disability supported funding only. So if they're in hardship, they can still apply for the hardship fund. The hardship fund also has other elements to it that cover a lot of different areas. So I think it's based on a student. If they're unsure of what they might be eligible for, again, we have a team that they can speak to and say, actually, can I apply for this? But in general, DSA sits alone for a very specific purpose. So a hardship fund that might be out there, absolutely they can apply for. But another stream of disability funding, unlikely.
Great. That's really, really useful to know. I'm sure a lot of students will appreciate having that kind of understanding of the different finance support packages that are out there, and also the different support process that you put in place. I think I remember reading that one of the things you can help to support or give kind of signposting towards is to do with kind of like accommodation and parking, and ensuring that we've got them where they need to be, essentially. Is that a support that you also provide?
Yes. So within SWIS and within accessibility, there is a system, a process for students to apply at the point of application to the university for accommodation or parking on medical grounds. They will need, again, to show supporting evidence and show the reasons for the application, but then they can be considered for adapted accommodation or proximity parking. But absolutely, contact SWIS, talk to us about your circumstances so that we can talk you through the eligibility criteria. You know, it's going to be fairly clear what that criteria is, but it sometimes helps to speak to somebody about how you think you might fit it or what your circumstances are. But yes, there's absolutely a process for that, and the people that look at those forms initially are within the accessibility and wellbeing team, so people that recognise the evidence and understand the evidence.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. I think those are kind of all the main questions I've got for you today. Tracy, thank you so much for agreeing to come along and have a little chat about all these different support processes that we can put in place here at the University of Essex. And I'm hoping that this has reassured some students that may be a little bit unsure about how they go about getting support whilst they're here, or kind of who they need to talk to, or if they think that they'll be eligible or anything like that, knowing they've got people they can go and talk to directly to find out about that even before they've started at the university, I think will be give a lot of students a peace of mind. So thank you so much. And I just wanted to share the link, and I'll put it in the description box as well, about the episode for the kind of main page on our website about disability related support. So that's www.essex.ac.uk/student/access-and-disability. Again, that will all be linked on the episode description, but I just thought I'd share that as well before we finish. But thank you so much for coming along today. And I hope that anyone listening, if they have any more questions, if they're worried about coming to university because they've got a disability or a learning difference or something like that, that they know that they can get in touch with any of the lovely members of the SWIS team at the University of Essex, and they will hopefully be able to calm any worries that you might have and answer any questions. But that is everything today on this episode, and thank you all so much for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you want to listen to more, our previous episodes are available on the playlist, and you can keep an eye out for new releases by making sure you're a registered listener. Please email us on outreach@essex.ac.uk to find out more. We've recently launched a variety of fantastic online courses for students to support their transition, independence, and a variety of skills at such an important time in their lives. Made up of short videos, interactive activities, and resources, the modules aim to provide students with the confidence to succeed. Our courses include the Further Studies Preparation Programme for students in years 10 to 11, University Preparation Programme for students in year 12 to 13, and Essex Preparation Programme for those about to embark on their journey here at Essex. Head to essex.ac.uk/schools-and-colleges to enrol today. Thanks again, and don't forget to share the episode with your family, friends, and colleagues.
The University of Essex podcast. Research, experience, and information.